Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe Live. This show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Thursday. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live, Nancy and Lisa.
Hi, everyone. This is Nancy. It's my favorite night of the week. Time for Chit Chat Cafe Live, airing live on Artist First World Radio Network. A great time to relax, unwind, and enjoy some chit-chat with Lisa and I. We are just overjoyed tonight to have David Daniel, the senior producer of CNN Entertainment News, as our guest. And later, we're joined by Nadia Suleiman, known as the Octomom, and Michael Lohan, Lindsay Lohan's dad. Lisa, what a week! We've been busier than ever.
I know.
We gotta go on. It's just great fun just reaching out to all of our listeners, and we'd like to thank all of you for your great response and listening to our archives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got some big numbers with the archives. It's amazing.
It is, and over 500,000 listeners to Davy Jones's archive alone.
I know, that's not cool.
Yeah, that's really fun to hear that news. Well, let's get right to our products, and we would like to, first of all, introduce David Daniel. He is the senior producer of CNN Entertainment News, and he's joining us tonight for our products of the week. Welcome, David.
Good evening, ladies. Wonderful to join you. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
You're welcome. Well, Lisa and I love to talk about products that we love. Lisa, you go first.
Okay, tonight, my girlfriend, who lives in England, when she was visiting here last year, Lorraine, she introduced me to this. I have like a frizzy hair problem sometimes because I don't blow dry my hair properly. So she goes, come here, I got something for you. I'm going to put something on your hair. And it was macadamia nut healing oil. And you just need a teeny, teeny bit, like the size of the pinhead. And you rub it between your palms, and it smells so good. It smells really clean, and it's got a really nice smell. And you just gently put it over your hair, and it gives it shine. It takes the frizz out. It's like $40 for like a little bottle of it, but it's really good. And it's called macadamia nut oil. It's not even...
Oh, now where can we find it? I always admire your hair, Lisa. It always looks so...
What do you have to do? You have to put it... I get it at Ulta. You get it at Ulta.
Okay.
But you can just get it online, too. Just put in Google macadamia nut oil for the hair. And a bunch of different places that sell it come up. I think you get it at drugstore.com, paylessbeauty.com, just a lot of different places. But it's $40. But I think it probably would last. I bought a little teeny. They had a little sample size at Ulta, and I bought that. But... if you bought the $40 one, it probably lasts you for 5 years because you don't need a lock, then your hair will look greasy.
Well, your hair always looks gorgeous. I'm going to try it. Whenever Lisa speaks, I take notes.
And what's your product? What are you doing this week?
Always lots of fun. Well, I'm sharing something that I mentioned, a year and a half ago on Chit Chat Cafe Live. It's one of my favorite things. And it's a piece of exercise equipment called the Ab Circle Pro. It's a red disc, and you put your knees on it, and you hold onto the handles, and you turn up to the right, and then the left, and you feel like you're on an amusement ride.
I guess you have to exercise to use that, huh?
Yeah. But I love it because you're working out, you're working your abs, your obliques, and on top of it, it's fun because it feels like you're at a ride. Sometimes if I don't do it for a couple days and I get back on it, still after 2 years, I find myself giggling because it's just so much great fun. So it's the Ab Circle Pro. I've seen it at Target.
Okay, cool.
Or sporting goods stores. And again, it's a great fun exercise and something different than just sit-ups, crunches. Mm-hmm. It gets your obliques.
Okay.
David, Daniel, what is your product that you enjoy?
Well, I had to think about this for a minute because maybe it's just because I'm a guy, but I was a little bit of a disadvantage trying to think of what products do I want to extol or use. And I thought because I'm going to be talking about Hollywood, it should be something that Hollywood offers or something related to Hollywood. And when I thought that way, it didn't take long to realize my favorite product or attraction of Hollywood, and that's the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I have a special affinity for it, partially because I walk along it every single day on my way to and from work. It's probably the biggest tourist attraction in Hollywood, if not in Southern California. Certainly the biggest free tourist attraction. Anybody can walk along Hollywood Boulevard or up or down Vine Street, where it also extends for several blocks. And I see that every day, people stopping, posing with stars, taking pictures, talking with each other. Oh, I remember her. I remember him. And it really is, I know there are other places that have walks of fame, but Hollywood's is, as far as I know, the original, and it really is unlike anything else. It's such a part of the fabric of the community. And it really, I see people smiling over it every single day. It's really something.
Well, we love it, too. Lisa, have you been there, too?
Yes, I've been there a few times. Yep.
Oh,
really
I just
cool.
love it. You know, you bend down, you put your hands and stars, handprints, and measure. Is your shoe the same size as Marilyn Monroe? And
that's right. And that's an extra part of it, sort of. The what you're talking about is the courtyard at the legendary Grauman's Chinese Theater, which is right there at what's now Hollywood and Highland. Where they've had the Oscars every year for the last several years, and the stars' footprints and handprints and autographs, and that's a huge attraction as well. And that is right there on Hollywood Boulevard, where you know people are also paying attention to the stars that are at the Walk of Fame. You have costumed people dressed like superheroes and like Marilyn Monroe and Charlie Chaplin taking pictures with people. That's not free. That's for a hoped-for donation. But it really is amazing. It's not something people have to line up for or buy tickets for. They simply are drawn, whether they arrive by themselves or in tourist buses. And, you know, every day people flock there because there's no place in the world like Hollywood.
And David, you're talking actually about as you walk along, you can look down and see the stars and the star's name and a little bit about. And there's a symbol for each one, whether they were in music or acting or directing. Is that correct?
Right. There are five categories in all. I'm not sure if I know them off the top of my head. I know television is one, radio, movies, stage, and there's a fifth one, I'm sure, and I'm sure one of our listeners, if not more than one, knows what it is. But basically, it's to show which field of entertainment you made your mark in. And there are people, Gene Autry, for instance, I know has stars in both radio and television, and I think music. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. But I know there are celebrities who have made their mark in more than one field who have received stars in more than one field. And that's the little icon on the star shows you which one that is.
I think
of course, there are
great.
Also people like the Beatles and Michael Jackson who have stars both by themselves and as part of a group. Individual yeah. stars and then stars with the group that they were also famous in.
Well, Lisa, something for us to achieve. Can you imagine Chit Chat Cafe Live? Star.
Well, I don't think we're going to go that far, but
you never know.
Another trip there.
Yeah, we're shooting big.
Yeah.
Well, David, you know, it's been great fun tweeting with you, and everyone can find David on Twitter, CNN LA David. And we have it listed on our Chit Chat Cafe Live website. You can click and it will take you right to him. Your tweets are amazing every day or week. You remind us all about everyone's birthdays, the famous birthdays that are coming up. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's funny. I got into Twitter a little over a year ago, and for those of you listening who aren't on Twitter, don't worry. It's not a secret club that you can't get into. It's basically just Facebook and all it is the status updates and nothing else. It really is delightful, though. I've made a lot of great friends with it. But when I was starting out a little over a year ago and I was trying to figure out, you know, what do I have to offer? I'm going to tweet entertainment news when it happens, of course, but is there something regular I can do? And I realized that while there are lists of celebrities' birthdays everywhere, some of them are even accurate, I can add some information along each one. I can put a spin on it so it's a little more entertaining to read and maybe to retweet to your friends. And it's always interesting to me to see which ones draw the most attention. The other day was a big day in celebrity birthdays. There were two music legends born on the same day, Aretha Franklin and Elton John. And there were two Desperate Housewives, also born on the same day, Marcia Cross and Brenda Strong. But none of those luminaries received the most attention, the most retweets and the most comments. The celebrity who received the most attention, who had a birthday that day, was Richard O'Brien. Have either of you heard of it? Do you remember Richard O'Brien?
No.
Richard O'Brien was the creator of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, my God.
And he played Riff Raff, the sort of gray-haired, one of the guys who worked there, at the house of Frank Enfurter, where Brad and Janet show up that dark and stormy night. And he's the one who wrote the show, the stage show that became the movie, and that's his claim to fame. And more people said, oh, yeah, of course, and, you know, started reminiscing on Twitter about Richard O'Brien. So it's not always the most obvious things that get people talking. It's the things that sort of tickle a memory in the corner of their mind a fond memory or something they'd forgotten about for a while. And it's going to be interesting that a lot of us get back, a lot of the stories I think we're going to wind up talking about get back to Twitter, since that's where, you know, the three of us connected, and that's where I'm finding a lot of Hollywood connections. It's really interesting.
That's always fun. And I personally love Twitter because I love puzzles, and you have to fit so many letters in, and it's just great fun.
It is. It's a little bit like writing a headline. If, you know, to go back to my journalism roots, you know you've got a certain amount of space, and you have to get the idea across, and hopefully it's interesting and maybe even grammatical on occasion. And Twitter is a little bit like that. You really have to make every letter count if you want to say something that's at all complex in that little space.
Well, speaking of your roots, tell us a little bit about your journalism roots.
I have had wanted to be a journalist just about as long as I can remember. I was, you know, like a lot of kids, I was on the high school newspaper. I did the newspaper and the radio station and the TV station in college, and was fortunate enough to attend Boston University, which had a very strong college of communication and a connection to CNN. BU was one of the few places where CNN actually recruited college graduates and about-to-be graduates. And so I found myself, shortly after graduation, packing up all of my meager possessions and into a friend's van, and my dad and I driving across the country from my home in L.A. to Atlanta, Georgia, to work at CNN. I worked at Headline News, not HLN as it is now, but folks who remember the old Headline News, which was basically like news radio on television. You know, news radio is a new set of stories every half hour, and, you know, sports at the same time every half hour, weather, traffic. And that's what Headline News was, and it was very popular, and it was very fast-paced. If you've got a new show every half hour, that means you have 48 news shows a day, and you have to be able to turn stories around quickly and sum something up in a very short amount of time, because we wanted to put as many stories as possible into each half hour. It was a great training ground. Plus, and this will more or less give away my age, but that's all right. I arrived at CNN in June of 1990. And I trained a little bit and got to the point where they trusted me to write for air after about a month or so. And then in August of 1990, Saddam Hussein and his Republican Guard invaded Kuwait. And the Gulf War had begun. And it was an amazing time to be in news. It was an amazing time to be at CNN with our heroic boys in Baghdad, John Holloman and Peter Arnett and the wonderful Bernie Shaw. They're hunkered down in a hotel in Baghdad, the only news crew there, the only news crew able to broadcast from there, as we heard and occasionally saw the Gulf War beginning and the invasion beginning. If I had any doubts that journalism was where I wanted to be, they certainly were erased then. I spent close to a decade there, and then the opportunity came to move back to my native Los Angeles, and the opening that was in the LA Bureau was as a producer in the entertainment unit. And I'd always had a special affinity, especially growing up here, for Hollywood and for entertainment stories. When there was an important figure who died in entertainment, like when Jimmy Stewart passed away, I remember I wanted to be the one to write that obit story because I knew I would get it right. I knew I would stress the importance that he had to so many fans and hit on the biggest movies that he did, and really, you know, for my own satisfaction, I wanted to do it. So it was a natural fit, and I've been out here more than a dozen years now. Delightful to be back in Los Angeles. I loved going to school in New England, and I loved the friendliness and the warmth, both figurative and literal, of the South. Snared myself a steel magnolia from Tennessee while I was there and brought her back to L.A. as my bride. And it really is, I know Hollywood and the people in Hollywood get a bad rap sometimes, maybe even most of the time. But when someone is captured by a movie or by a new artist like Adele or a new television show that they really love, it really is one of the last unifying things I think we have in this country. It's something that crosses a lot of boundaries. And I really get a kick out of talking with the people who create that media, the people who work in Hollywood, not just the stars, but the people who really make it happen, the people who build sets and the people who create costumes and the people who scout locations. So much goes into the creation of the magic that Hollywood makes, and I really like seeing and occasionally giving a chance to getting an opportunity to let other people see through what I write and through what I do what really happens here and how absolutely magical it is.
Well, it just sounds wonderful, and we applaud you for your job. You know, we turn to CNN all the time for our news, and the entertainment news is just wonderful, so thank you very much, David.
It's my pleasure. Hey.
Now, is there someone that you would love to meet or interview?
Oh, gosh. It's tough. I've had the opportunity to talk to several of my heroes. I was a huge fan of The West Wing when it was on, and I had the opportunity shortly before he won the Emmy to talk to John Spencer, who we've since, you know, lost, of course, to a heart attack. But we chatted on the set in the Roosevelt Room of the White House, the faux White House, for an hour, and I don't know if he'd been interviewed by someone who was such a fan before. But that's an absolutely treasured memory. I've gotten a chance a couple of times to speak to James Taylor, who is my absolute musical idol, and that was an incredible experience. I've spoken with Oscar winners Emma Thompson and Denzel Washington and people like that. I spoke with Janet Leigh, interviewed her in her Beverly Hills home when she had written a book years ago. That was amazing. If there's one person, got to think about this, one celebrity or one star, I would probably say Woody Allen. I don't want to say withdrawn, but you know, he doesn't come to Hollywood. He doesn't make his movies here. I've spoken with James Cameron before, and he's amazing. I would like to speak with Steven Spielberg and other great directors. But Woody Allen, a one-on-one interview where I could actually get him to open up a little bit and talk about the arc of his career and the different movies he's made and the people he's worked with, that would really be something, I think.
Tell us about Jeopardy.
Yeah, I've always been a bit of a trivia buff, and you know, anybody who likes trivia or anybody who's ever watched Jeopardy and sat there and shouted out the answers at the TV set thing, so I could do that. And after several attempts, I actually a few years ago did get to do that. It was amazing. I was a 2-day champ on Jeopardy. I had, which means I was on three times, because when you lose, then that's the end. I did very well in the first game, and then not very well at all the second game, but I did better than the other two people, and so I hung on, and the third game I lost. And the reason for the difference, part of the reason, is they tape an entire week of shows in one day. They tape five shows in a day for economic reasons. And so if you're on the third show that they tape that day, well, that'll be a Wednesday show. Well, they gather a dozen or so people in the room for the day, and they randomly pick the first three people who are going to go out there, and then the winner stays, and they draw two more people and so forth. And I got drawn for the very last show, the Friday show. And I won that, which meant I had to come back the next taping day to appear on further shows. Well, that was, I think, a Thursday. The actual taping day was a Thursday. They were going to tape again the following Monday. In between, I had committed to and been training to run the San Francisco Marathon. So I taped the shows on Thursday. On Friday, I drove with my family up to San Francisco and stayed with family there and rested up. And on Sunday, got up early and ran the marathon. It's a great run. You get to run over the Golden Gate Bridge and all. And then Sunday night, after the race, or Sunday afternoon, drove back down to Los Angeles. And Monday morning, first thing, got up and traveled over to Culver City to the Sony studios to try to be my absolute sharpest on Jeopardy. I don't recommend that for anybody who really wants to do their best on Jeopardy. It's not the best way to be sharp. And I'm not making excuses. I could have just blown off the race and done and stuck with Jeopardy. But I had a great experience. It was a wonderful time. I think they ought to do a Jeopardy fantasy camp. I mean, even if you didn't win any money, I think just the opportunity to be on that stage and to play a simulated game and have your friends and family, whatever, in the stands cheering you on. I'd do it again just to have the experience without the winnings. It was really fun.
Did you ever meet Hugh Jackman?
Sorry?
Did you ever meet Hugh Jackman?
I did. I interviewed Hugh Jackman for a very interesting, kind of hard to grasp but fascinating and beautiful movie called The Fountainhead that he did with Rachel Weisz. And he was a terrific interview. Very intelligent, very friendly. Large guy. I'm not a small person. I'm about 6 feet tall, and I'm not too skinny, but I'm always impressed by people who really have presence. Hugh Jackman really has presence. I interviewed Josh Brolin and shook hands with him and felt like I was a kid shaking hands with a grown up. It was amazing. Stars who really have presence, just even after all the time I've been doing this, really, really floor me. And Hugh Jackman was definitely one of those. And charming, of course.
Do you get nervous? Do you get nervous before you're going to interview a star? Or does it get like they're just people,
I get a little keyed up. Part of that is just because I want to do a good job. And interviewing is a skill, like any others. I'm not the worst interviewer in the world. I'm not the best. You want to be able to establish a rapport with them. When it's a very big star, especially, or if it's someone that I am really looking forward to meeting. I had the opportunity to interview Jessica Chastain twice this year. She's an up-and-coming actress. She's absolutely phenomenal. I interviewed her for The Help. I was lucky enough to do the interviews for the cast of The Help and for a smaller movie that she did called The Debt. And both times, she absolutely blew me away. I was keyed up because I thought, this is someone who's really going to go places. It's been a while since I've gotten truly... All right, Denzel Washington. I interviewed Denzel Washington a number of years back, and that was a sort of you're sitting there going, okay, don't look nervous, don't screw this up, come on. And and of course, incredibly beautiful women. And, I talked to Angelina Jolie, and I have to try to make sure that the words coming out of my mouth make some kind of sense. Talking to Emma Thompson, who I'd adored for a very long time, there's the natural tendency to just want to gush. Two of the people I talked to on The Help, they paired them, were Sissy Spacek and Allison Janney. Two remarkable, tremendous actresses who are both great in the movie. And I got butterflies and told them afterwards, this is absolutely blowing my mind talking to the two of you. And they couldn't have been more kind and more complimentary of each other. So fortunately, most of the people I've had the opportunity to talk with in Hollywood are, maybe they're just acting. Maybe the way they act in an interview is an acting role like anything else. But the encounters I've had with almost all of them have been friendly and courteous and generous. And it really, you walk out of there going, this really is an amazing way to earn a living.
Wow, that's cool. That is a cool way to make a living.
It really is. Of course, I'm not talking about the other 95% of the job that's not nearly as interesting or as exciting, but those are the high points, certainly.
What do you think you would have done if you didn't, work with CNN? What do you think what career path do you think you would have taken?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure what else I'm really fit to do. I write well, and I talk well, and I know a lot about the news in Hollywood and have a keen interest in keeping up with what's going on in the world, whether it's, Lindsay Lohan's final progress report hearing today and ending her probation, as I'm sure you'll talk about with her father a little later, or what's happening in politics, what's happening internationally. I have a real, yen for that kind of information. So I know a lot of people who majored in journalism and decided to go into PR instead. It just was better suited to them. Maybe I would have done that. I would love at some point to have gotten more into radio, because I really think it's a wonderful, evocative medium that can tell amazing stories. The kinds of stories you hear on public radio and elsewhere are just, the kind that make you sit in your car after you've already gotten home and sit in the garage because you don't want to miss the end of the story. That's really fascinating to me, and it's one of the reasons I'm so delighted to come on your show.
Well, we're totally honored to have you here, I have to tell you. Do you ever bump into Anderson Cooper while you're...
A couple of times I have, yes. When he comes out to the Los Angeles Bureau to do a show, we see him walking around, same as Wolf Blitzer or anybody else who comes out, and he is always unfailingly polite. He's appreciative of all the people who are usually working on other things in the LA Bureau and switch over to work with him. One of the many people I'm proud to work with, definitely.
Yeah, that's cool. You got a great resume.
It's all right. I don't know a lot of people who have been with one company my age, who have been with one company as long. If I can stick it out through, I think I figured late July, I will have worked for CNN for half my life.
Isn't that cool?
It's either cool or, depending on your point of view, it's, wow, what are you still doing there? A lot of my friends who change jobs, if not careers, every 5 or 10 years, find it a little hard to understand. But I've been treated especially well there, and hopefully I've given as good as I've received.
Well, again, we just love following you and looking at all of your tweets, and I also enjoy looking at your pictures of the Oscars. You were all in your tux, and tell us about that. What was that night like, just for us watching it on TV? You were there.
I was there. I actually got to attend the Oscars this year, which was a fluke. It was a ticket came my way, and I got permission, instead of working that night, to attend. Although it began with a bit of an embarrassing note. You both know, and I'm sure your listeners know, if you're a man driving in a car, especially if you're driving and you're wearing a suit, you generally take the suit jacket off to drive. Right. There's no reason to get it wrinkled. You put it, if you've got a hanger, you hang it. Otherwise, you lay it across the back seat. So that's how I was driving up to Hollywood and Highland for the Oscars. I had my jacket laid across the back seat. So, after we got through the security checkpoint and weaved around the barricades and got close to the point where the valets were taking the cars and parking them underground so that we could walk, the guests could walk to the entrance on the red carpet, no one would take my car. Remember, I had my jacket off, so they looked in and they saw a one man sitting by himself with a black vest and a white shirt on. I looked like a valet to them. They would not take my car. They thought a valet had already gotten into the car, into my little Prius, and was ready to drive it. They almost waved me down underground to park the car before I said, no, I have a ticket. I'm a guest. I'm allowed in. They were apologetic. They offered me a job. I said maybe next year. Got a chance to walk on the red carpet, which is because that's the only way in. I wasn't walking with the stars, of course. If you watch the telecast, you see it's kind of a split red carpet with the all of the people who the media are going to want to interview on one side, and everybody else on the other side. And so I got a chance to watch a little bit of that happening, wave to my colleagues who were stationed on the red carpet. And that's something I don't know if everybody sees. If you cover the Oscars, if you are on the red carpet as a journalist, you still have to wear formal gear. All of the cameramen, all of the technicians, all the men who are covering it are wearing tuxedos. Just to run a camera or whatever else. Not even if they're on camera, but just to run a camera or to hold a microphone or run cable. They're all dressed formally, and all the women are in ball gowns. It's just part of the glamour of the evening.
Oh, Lisa, can you only imagine?
So that was fun. I was sitting way up in what I call the Everest section, the very top balcony. No nosebleeds,
right.
Fortunately.
We're there. That's what's important, right?
Absolutely. And part of the fun of that, I realized, was you really understand the importance of the Oscars. The stars, I'm sure it's fun for them. It's exciting. They want to win. But the people around us up at the top are the friends and the close relatives of the people who are nominated in those other categories, the less glamorous categories. And, you know, for them, this is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to them. They don't get invited to big parties. This is the one chance to be recognized on a par with, on the same show as the Clooneys and the Pitts and the Jolies and the people who are the very pinnacle of Hollywood. On one side of my friend and I who were there, my colleague Jennifer and I were there, were a couple whose son was nominated for visual effects for Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And he didn't win, and they were a bit disappointed, but they were so excited for him and still so pleased to be there. On the other side, to my left, were four people, including three women, who were all dressed in beautiful Middle Eastern garb. They were there for a documentary, a short documentary that was nominated, called Saving Face. And I don't know if you've heard of this or seen it. It's amazing. There are people in Pakistan, men, who to get even with or to take anger out on women who either have spurned them or have some perceived slight, they scar them by throwing acid on their faces.
Oh, I've heard.
Figuring then they will not be, no one will want them. They won't be, they've ruined their lives. Well, there is a Pakistani plastic surgeon who has made this his cause, and he's mobilized help from all over the world to not only try to heal these women and repair the damage, but to lead the charge to bring these men to justice and to make sure that they're punished, even in this, very patriarchal part of the world. So it's an amazing movie, and their movie won. They won the Oscar for a documentary short, and when that happened, they went absolutely nuts. They were standing and screaming and crying, and, this is something that got very little mention, very little press, because it's one of the smaller, less-known categories. But it could not have been more important to these people, and, when you meet someone and something's important to them like that, it becomes important to you. I lent my handkerchief to the woman sitting next to me because she was just crying and all her makeup was going to go into her shoes. I still have a mascara scar, I think, on the handkerchief and won't come out from that, but it's a great memory.
Tell us again the name of that documentary. I'd like to
see that. It's called Saving Face.
Okay.
And obviously it's a pun. But
right.
It really just an absolutely marvelous experience. Seeing the Cirque du Soleil dancers was just as amazing as I'm sure it was at on television, except you had to try to look six directions at once. And the show was fun, pretty much the way it was on TV. And then afterwards, we were ushered upstairs because our tickets included tickets to the Governor's Ball, which was an absolutely phenomenal party. I posted some pictures of people walking around with their Oscars. Octavia Spencer walking around with Jessica Chastain with her Oscar. I interviewed them both for The Help. Got to chat a bit with several different people. Got to chat with a couple of stars, with Wolfgang Puck, who runs the show there and presents all the amazing food, with Ed Begley Jr., who I'd met a couple of times before and is a great guy. He spoke with me for several minutes very kindly. And the entertainment was not to be believed. I mean, I understand people will curse me because I had this amazing experience, and I'm aware that it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I'm incredibly fortunate and lucky to have had it. But I'm sitting there, Jennifer and I are drinking champagne, we're eating this amazing food that's being passed around, and they start the entertainment, and Tony Bennett gets up there, and he sings with this wonderful band all around him on a circular stage in the middle of the room that revolves slowly, with the dance floor all around, and he sings for about 20 minutes. He wraps up with I Left My Heart in San Francisco. And then he's replaced by a guy who's playing the saxophone and doing it pretty well, and I've sort of lost I'm not paying attention. I'm talking with Jennifer, and I'm looking around, and I realize, wait, that guy's really good. And I look around, and it's Dave Koz.
Oh, my.
The wonderful saxophonist. And then a wonderful singer gets up there, a club singer who is just terrific, and then a guy gets up there and starts blowing a horn. And it's a trumpet, and I think, well, that guy sounds good enough to be Arturo Sandoval. And I turn around, and it's because it is Arturo Sandoval.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it just is unbelievable. I will never, because, you know, life doesn't work that way, I will never be present at anything close to like this again. It's simply, you know, I'm sure that all of the aggravation that I've had in other areas of my life, when you get to the end, if you find out what, you know, what balanced, what scales or whatever, you know, all the crap that you suffered through here and there and all the problems you had and all the disappointments or the money troubles or whatever, that was for that night. That was because you got to go to the Oscars and the Governor's Ball. And I'll say, okay, that seems fair.
That's right. And the pictures were amazing to see. And that's just so exciting. Now, David, looking at your website, it's really fun to see all of the news about the celebrities. And is there a fun story right now that you can think of maybe that you worked on today that you can share with our listeners?
Well, I didn't work on this directly, but the big story today, well, it's several things going on. I mean, Nashville is mourning the loss of Earl Scruggs, who was a wonderful, wonderful banjo player. Nobody like him. The big story in Hollywood probably is Lindsay Lohan is no longer on probation. And this has been going on for close to 5 years. It was May of 2007 when she had that DUI. And she had, you know, it wouldn't have stretched out that long if she didn't have so many problems. And so there's a whole, you know, almost a whole generation of people who don't remember that she was an actress and one who was praised and a singer as well. I like the fact that she seems to finally have things together. This last, you know, she's been in front of four different judges over the last years, and this one, something finally seemed to click, whether it was, you know, the people around her telling her to get it together, whether it was maturity, but she followed through. You know, she got up at the crack of dawn to go work in the morgue for her community service. She went to the counseling she was supposed to. The judge, who was not by any means a pushover, praised her month after month, saying, you're on the right track, you're in the home stretch. And, you know, I got a good feeling seeing that she has finally done what she was supposed to have done a while ago, and really hoping that this can be the start of a career resurgence, or at least, you know, at the very least, a life resurgence for her of having things together more. And, you know, if the paparazzi would give her a break and let her go somewhere without mobbing her, that would probably help. But, you know, I know better than to think that.
Well, and we all wish Lindsay Lohan well. Now, speaking of that, we would like to say to our Chit Chat Cafe Live listeners that we're enjoying our time with David Daniel, the CNN entertainment producer, so much that we did contact and reschedule Nadia Suleman. So she will be joining us on a different night so we could extend our conversation with you, David. And we would at this time like to introduce you to our Chit Chat Cafe Live correspondent, Betty Ann Martino.
Hi, Betty Ann.
Hi, Dave. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm just great.
Do you have any questions for David?
Well, I kind of just came in on the conversation, so I'm not sure what's going on.
He's talking about entertainment
Hollywood.
Stuff. Hollywood. You love that stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
Take a shot. Anything Hollywood, I'll take a shot at.
Okay, what do you think about The Hunger Games?
I think it's absolutely amazing. I think that there are so many different angles to talk about. To bring it back to Twitter for just a second, I had a contest with my Twitter followers to say, okay, what's the opening weekend of Hunger Games actually going to be? They were talking about 100 million. They were talking about 120 million. The highest I heard from a so-called expert beforehand was $140 million. And one of my followers, named Joe Addy in New York, she said 150 million. And the final number was 152.5 million.
Wow.
Really, really close. She was by far the closest of anybody who guessed. It was, I have not actually seen the movie yet. I'm waiting for my wife. She's just about finished reading the book, and then we're going to get it, you know, we're going to go see it together. I enjoyed the book greatly. I thought it was compelling. I thought it was very well written. I'm looking forward to reading the sequels so that I don't have to save myself from any spoilers on the internet for the stories yet to come. I think it has a lot of strong messages about what we value and, you know, looking at other people's suffering or other people's pain for our entertainment. I think it has things to say about reality TV. And I have been amazed by Jennifer Lawrence from before she got her Oscar nomination for Winter's Bone. She is an incredibly promising actress. And, of course, now she's going to be in, and she's very well known. She could hardly have been in a bigger movie than Hunger Games. She was just in the last X-Men movie. And, you know, really the sky's the limit for her at this point. I'm also glad to see attention paid to authors. And Suzanne Collins, who wrote the Hunger Games books, she hasn't exactly pursued the spotlight. She seems to be more comfortable with print interviews than with broadcast interviews. But it's kind of like what people said about the Harry Potter movies. Anything that gets people, especially kids, reading more, and, you know, even if it doesn't go any further than reading the books of the movies that they love, I think that's a great thing. I'm addicted to the printed word. So anything that leads back to reading, that leads back to, and of course you can do much more in a book. They had to cut a lot of things out, from what I understand, of the book to make the movie, because otherwise, you know, the movie would be 5 hours long. So a lot of subplots go away, and a lot of characterizations are sort of limited or summarized. Hopefully people who are inspired by the movie or excited about the movie who haven't already read the book will and the sequels that follow will check that out, and they'll see, you know, the kind of amazing adventures that are there.
Exactly. Well, we have invited Suzanne Collins, and we're hoping that she will join us.
Well, if I can be a help in persuading her, let me know. I'll do it, but I can't.
Please, by all means, if you can, that'd be wonderful.
Hello? Hi, hello?
Well, hello. This is Nancy and Lisa.
Sorry. I'm late, and I apologize.
Well,
my name's Nadia. How are you? I'm late.
Okay, Nadia, this is great.
Hi.
Please let us introduce Betty Ann Martino and also David Daniel from CNN. David, would you stay on and join us for the conversation?
I'd be glad to.
All right, great. Nadia Suleman.
Yes, hi, how are you? How are you?
Yes. We're wonderful.
Good. Good. That's wonderful. I apologize if it's not too of a clear connection. I'm in my backyard, and I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, we can hear you. And, you know, we just love children on Chit Chat Cafe Live. Tell us about yours.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's a lot of them. It's like a little tribe. They're very, everyone's amazingly healthy and thriving. And the little ones, I just fully potty trained all eight by myself. So I'm proud of that. I'm so proud of that. Oh. And they're through the night, too, potty trained. So they all line up in the morning and go potty. And it's so cute. And they're just very obedient. It's amazing. They're very respectful. So I'm training them to be very, very obedient and respectful with, you know, a lot of unconditional love and acceptance. And they're just, they're the connection with each other is beautiful.
Hi, Nadia.
Hi.
Nadia, this is Betty Ann. How are you?
Fine. How are you? I'm good. Thank you.
What is your normal everyday routine like?
You know, it is. I'm very, very consistent. I think that's the key, especially with little ones. With their life, it's very consistent. And we wake up around. I get up right before 6 because I have my other ones. I have to get them ready for school. My older kids. And so the balancing act with all the different kinds of needs, demands with the different ages. But the little ones, I have to say, the 8 are the easiest of them all. The most challenging are my eldest kids. And I think the parenting style I implemented was different than what I'm doing now. So when I get my older kids up and out for school, I'm very grateful for my dad, their grandpa, who picks them up for school. I start getting my up to 6th son. He's the only one who has autism, only one with a disability. I get him ready, change him, shower him and all that, feed him, get him off on the bus, and then I start getting my twins ready for kindergarten, and then I cook a lot. I feel like I'm a chef nonstop, just addiction, but not pregnant. Just constantly cooking. And I cook like 10 meals a day. And this cleaning,
God.
I did. The little ones line up in the morning. You know, one downstairs bathroom, and they're on the potty. They do everything. I've trained them, and it took a couple years, but I've trained them to change themselves. They are now go upstairs, go to the bath, go march to the bathtub. They all march upstairs and go. And before I get there, they're already in the bathtub, and I'm like, oh shoot! And they're like, oh,
wow.
Yeah, they're amazing. They wash themselves, they brush their own teeth, and they go potty on their own now. And I have some older ones jumping on the trampoline right now, and it's loud. I apologize. It's okay. The older ones are fighting.
Okay.
and then the little ones, I really want to start documenting more and writing about the amazing bond and connection they have, because I think with high order especially, it's unbelievable. The bond is special, and they have a bond that nobody else in the world will share. And they're probably going to be best friends for the rest of their lives.
That's great. They're very, very lucky. David, do you have a question? You sound very happy, and that's really nice to hear. Do you ever get any private time for yourself to do something to enjoy? I try my best, you know, for me, I'm trying to take some classes
when I can to earn my personal training license, and if they're aka real job. So I'm, you know, by the time before they're, hopefully when they're around four, they go in preschool, I'll be able to really work, because I feel guilty accepting any money from anyone by showing them what to do in regard to working out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time more than twice or three, at the most three times a week, to go for a couple hours to the gym. Grandma will stay here, and I will run. And literally, I'm running away from stress. I'm dumping my stress. It's all for stress. I could care less about the reflection in the mirror. I just care about dumping the stress in that. That's called survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we, especially moms, we have to have a way, an outlet to get rid of that stress. You have to have something.
Yeah, sure.
And that's to help exercise and sleep. I found out that sleep is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number one.
David, do you have a question for Nadia?
Not exactly a question, other than sort of what you've been describing of how do you do it, because I can certainly say, you know, my wife and I have one child, and I think anybody with fewer than a half dozen wonders how you manage to keep your sanity and keep everything together.
Right now, it's like living, okay, in 10, 15 years from now, I'm going to reflect back and be the same, like, what, how? How did I cope? How did I do it? I don't know. When you're in it, it's like almost like you're in a war, but it's not a miserable war. We have a lot of fun, and we're happy. And I'm trying to raise happy, healthy children. But it's almost like that, and like you live in the moment. Every single moment you live in increments, like baby steps. So you're living in here and now, and you're thinking about what's going to happen the next hour. You don't really see the overall big, broad picture and how monolithic it is in your life. And in, you know what I mean? You just live for the moment. And although I'm very aware how extraordinarily expensive it's going to be for college, I'm already planning in my head, I'm hoping 8 to 10 medical schools to pay for. That's my dream. Yet I'm kind of going to project my deferred dream. I wanted to be a doctor onto the kids. I see them. They love, you know, little medical kits, and they like the little ones especially. And that's my, I have to maintain those big dreams, and that's for business, I'm hoping to have. I have a lot of dreams in starting fitness wear and children's clothing and maternity wear, and I just, it's a matter of the opportunity. You know, I'm praying it happens someday. I know I'm going to try to make it happen. For them,
it's amazing.
For my kids.
Especially Nadia, it's impressive to hear, because I've got to think that with so much more in the short term to focus on every single day, so many more immediate details, that it's got to be all the more important and all the more difficult to try to plan long term.
It is, but I have to for them. So that's why people, when they ask me a question about dating, I'm like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. I must live on Mars, because I would never ever prioritize something like that. My life completely is revolved around my kids, and that's what's sad, is that the media portrays such a false picture of this character that seems to ever materialize. Because this character, I would never want to know that kind of superficial, disgusting character, and that is the opposite. It's so ironic that it's the opposite. It's not even similar. It's not even dissimilar. It's completely the opposite. I mean, I live for them. I'm married to my kids. You make a choice in your life to have one child. you have to devote your life to that child. I'm sorry, your life will be different. It will have to, you have to sacrifice a lot in order to really raise a healthy habit. And, you know, I could be a type of parent, and I could be selfish, and I could go on dates, and, you know, the celebrity thing. If I do something, it's just pretend, and it's for money. That's it. Anything on TV, it's just, it's all pretend, and it's all for money. And the reality of my life is I have to be devoted to these kids until they're 18. I have to. And even then, whoa, I'm going to be planning for their college. So, you know, my life is revolved fully, 100% around them. It is hard, but I have to plan and be very, very pragmatic and very realistic.
Well, Nadia, Betty Ann would like to ask you one last thing.
Sure.
Well, Nadia, do you ever get a chance to... Hi, it's Betty Ann again. Do you ever get a chance to rest or have any downtime at all?
You're going to laugh right now. I'm acting as my own antenna. I'm in my backyard. Some of the kids are jumping the trampoline, standing up on a chair so we won't get disconnected because, again, it's not a good area. And the shower upstairs, I'm very good in conserving, but I'm so embarrassed. There's so much going on. I forgot about today. So my manager, she texts me, don't forget about calling. I'm like, oh, no. And so the shower's on upstairs. That's my time. Yeah, I put the kids, the little ones go to bed around this time and after they bathe and all that, and then that's my time. Even if it's 5 minutes, that is just unbelievable for me, a relaxation like you wouldn't believe. And I think because of the situation, I think I've learned to become more grateful for every single thing in life. Even a five-minute hot shower is a vacation. I think I realize everything happens in life for a reason now. And I was a spoiled brat growing up, only child. Nothing was good. I wanted more, more, more. And never really, really took time to appreciate what's meaningful in life. The littlest things we really need to be grateful for. And I'm actually, as hard as it is, and as many sacrifices as I'm making, I don't think I regret hitting rock bottom financially, because I don't think I ever would have become so grateful for every little thing. And now that's how I'm raising my kids. That's how all kids should be raised.
Well, Nadia, we wish you great joy and happiness with your children, and hope you join us again on Chit Chat Cafe Live.
Thank you. And is this a possibility to do this often, or how does this work? This is very new.
This is our weekly radio show, and we have different guests on each week, and it would just be delightful to hear back again from you and hear more about you and your children.
That's wonderful, and I'm very grateful for this opportunity. Thank you so much.
We're promoting you on our website.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. And David, Daniel, it was quite an honor tonight to have you join us from CNN, and thank you again. We hope you join us again.
I would be delighted to. The honor was mine, and I would love to come back again and have you ask about more Hollywood stars and stories, and hopefully I can spend more time talking to you, because it was really a delight.
Well, thank you very much,
you,
David and Nadia.
Thank you. Nice meeting all of you. Thank you so much for having
me.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Well, we're thanking also our sponsors tonight, Laura Geller Makeup and Intimacy Bras and St. Croix Orthopedics, and Corey King, our producer. You can tune in every Wednesday night on our Disperse at 7 p.m. to hear the Corey King Show.
I would like to thank our guest, David Daniel from CNN, and Nadia Suleiman. And I'm inviting everybody to enjoy our archives. You can listen to our past shows. Mary Higgins Clark, Priscilla Presley, we've had Melania Trump. Just scroll down to the date and the guest you'd like to listen to, click it on, and enjoy while you're playing on Facebook or you're doing work on your computer.
And we're also extending the invitation again to have Michael Lohan join us another evening. We're live every Thursday night, and thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.